sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobic, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young, and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021. My Negro made bail. Who am I kidding? My nigga just made bail. I said, my nigga just made bail. Welcome, bienvenue, to another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, Beat Black, a.k.a. Beat Blizzard, a.k.a. Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com on the web. Before I continue with the show, I need to remind you new listeners, I need to teach you new listeners that this podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green, and waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Rouge et bleu is up in this bitch. I'm representing and holding it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé Québec, and Soul in the City of Much Music. This episode is being recorded on, December 11th, 2022, 4:53 p.m. What's the weather like? It's snowing out there? Yeah, a bit of snow in the 613. You know what? Fuck the weather. It's snowing. That's all you need to know. -5. But it feels colder than that. Yeah. This episode is also brought to you by the letter F. F for fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. If you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. You know, before I continue, I'm going to read this. And this is like, you know, this is as close to not all men, not all white people. I'm just going to read it for the fuck of it. I say this to my classes. Oh, this is a tweet from, doesn't matter, something I found on the internet. I say this to my class. The problem isn't men, it's patriarchy. The problem isn't white people, it's white supremacy. The problem isn't straight people, it's homophobia. Recognize system of oppression before letting individual defensiveness paralyze you from dismantling them. Yeah, you know what, I think I'm only saying this in case one day I'm about to host the Oscars and they go for my podcast, and they use this, my fuck Whitey, as a reason to, oh my God, he's racist. I'm like, but I mean, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? If you're so, what's the word, fanatical about your white skin, then yeah, I can see why you would get defensive to me calling you Whitey. But, you know, you know, I might start the show with that tweet for legality purposes, but whatever. How you guys doing, man? I'll be honest with you, man. It's not that I don't feel like recording, but Jesus Christ, it's like, if sometimes I look at myself as a roommate, and I have this negative energy that I'm taking it out on my roommate. And what I do is, it's like I get into my parents' mode. I become like my parents, and every single thing I do, I scrutinize. They're like, ah, fuck, you fucked that up. Told you, put the pen back on the pen. Turn off the lights when you're not using it. Like, I have that nagging voice fucking with me right now before the podcast. And not that it matters to you, but it's just, I feel like if I acknowledge it, then it's like, you know, the damage it could do is softened. So that's where I'm at. Yeah, I'm mindful of my human experience, of my internal experience, and I'm sharing it with y'all. All right, let's. So I have a thing called intro. It's not really an intro, but it's like, I mean, I already did the intro, so I should probably just call it part one of the of my podcast. But I'm referring to my rundown sheet here. Right, but so here we go. So part one, yes. First thing I want to do is plug the last episode 036. Heal myself from this experience we call life. And that title was in reference to a quote from Lizzo. In an article which is linked in the show notes of the last episode. In an article that talks about how Lizzo defending herself, but she's in reference to motherfuckers attacking Lizzo for misunderstanding something she said. She was accused of saying that she only makes music for white people. And the truth is, she says, yo, man, I create music for me to heal myself from this experience we call life. And I thought that was like beautiful poetry on her part. And in a way, this podcast is supposed to be my attempt to heal myself from this experience called life. Is it working? I'll get back to you on that one. All right, let's get to the title of this episode. So the reason why I was debating, at the beginning, I was talking about not calling this the intro, is because I'm just gonna jump into it. The title of today's episode 037, Welcome Home, Brittany Griner. She's been on my mind this week a lot because it has to do with the fact that she was recently released from from prison, from Russian prison. There was a swap between her and Victor Boot. I think that's how you pronounce his name. But does it really matter? Anyways, yeah, aka Mr. Merchant of Death. Now, Merchant of Death is really more the people are saying, you know, the media ran with it. No, there's actually a book out there that I own called The Merchant of Death. After watching that movie, Lord of War with Nicolas Cage, I was fascinated by that movie, and I was interested in reading about the dude that this movie was based on. And it just killed me about how, yo, this motherfucker made a killing off selling arms. Holy shit, yeah, selling arms, and this asshole, you know, especially, you know, to terrorists, to African nations. He funded a lot of like a lot of wars were courtesy of this motherfucker, and the American, yeah, and that's who we traded. Who the fuck am I talking about? The Americans traded Brittany Griner. The reason she's been on my mind is two reasons. One is I remember following this story and kept meaning to talk about her situation because it broke my heart. The human being in me. Sympathize or felt bad for her predicament. So what happened is she went to play basketball in Russia. You know, she's a WNBA fan, NBA fan, a player, and she loves the sport. And she went to Russia. They said, hey, I don't know what team they got her to play over there, but you know, basically money was involved. But on the way coming back, leaving, she was arrested at the border because they detected, they found a small amount of, is it marijuana? Not marijuana, but like marijuana residue, some shit. And as a result, she ended up in jail and they gave her 9 years. And ever since she's been in jail, there's been a campaign. I don't know, is it campaign? But, you know, people are like, hey, what the fuck? Bring her home. It's unfair that she's there, bring her home. And there's been a lot of efforts by the American government to bring her home. This week, she was finally brought home. And I think what I found interesting is the mixed response to that news. But the first link to this article to the segment is
I want you to know, every mistake I make, I pick up on it. The my evil side picks up on it and is like cursing me out for it. It's annoying the fuck out of me. Hold on a second. It's nagging me to death for it. So I'm powering through here. Maybe this is why I'm taking a bit of a long time with this motherfucking intro, because I'm trying to get into my groove here. How did I do comedy? Anyway, yeah. How did I do it during the comedy days when I had these moves? Or was I, maybe alcohol. Yeah, usually I took a shot of Hennessy and that shut that motherfucker up. But anyways, all right. So where was I? Yeah. All right. I was talking about the first link to the Britney. The link I have is of TMZ, and it just shows Britney Griner. Okay. Britney Griner heading towards the plane to head back to United States, and Victor Bout, coming off that same place. She's coming on, and she's being, and oh, wait, hold on a second. Did she shake hand with, oh, they don't show if she shakes hands with Britney Griner, but whatever, man. They just show Victor Bout coming out and coming back home to Russia, and ooh, who is she talking to? Some dude, some chic looking ass dude. I don't know what that's about, but maybe they were involved in the trade. But whatever. Anyway, what fascinated me the most is the fucking internet, man. The mixed response to her release or trade, to this trade, and I found myself wondering, why am I on the side of, why the fuck do I care? And B, why am I on the side of the people who are like, welcome home, Britney? And it hit me. Well, two things. One is, I'm a fucking human being, man. I would hate to be in her situation. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, it's her fault. What the fuck was she thinking, bringing drugs to Russia, knowing that they have really strict laws, and and she's a black woman? I'm going to tell you this. I'm choosing to believe that she did not do that shit on purpose. When they said, hey, we have drug residue, she freaked the fuck out. Whether it's true or not, hey, that's the other thing too, is we're taking their word on it. For all we know it, they probably sprinkled some crack on her and they said, hey, we found drugs on you, whatever. Okay, but that's not, sorry. I'm gonna stick to the facts. Okay. According to the facts, or the understood facts, is that she had some like residue and she was like, I'm not sure if it's, did she say it's prescribed shit? But whatever. Whatever they found was not supposed to be in that bag. When she must have packed quick or something, but she wasn't in denial. Hey, yo, this ain't my drug. She wasn't in denial about it, but she was like, wow, oops, whatever. And it's happened to me that I got caught at the border, but I remember having a backpack, traveling with this one backpack that I remember I usually store drugs in. Not that I was a drug dealer, but I would store little joints. After I smoked it, I put it in a little capsule, put it in my bag, and then I remember thinking about how, wait a minute, what are the chances the drug residues, like, of course I would take the drug out, the weed out. I should be careful, I say drugs out, take the weed out, but my point is, my bag, I wouldn't be surprised if a drug dog were like to whiff it and be like, freak the fuck out on me, you know. I'm like, oh shit, calm down, Benji. I'm trying to find a funny dog thing. Anyway, oh my god, I'm going all over the place. Yeah, actually, I'm still not sure what I'm trying to say, so I'm feeling my own self. I'm not jerking off, but I'm feeling my own self trying to figure out what I'm trying to say. So yeah, it bothered me. I felt for her. I felt bad for her being in the situation. And as a black woman, as a black person, I don't think anyone goes to a foreign country trying to get themselves arrested. Now, I won't lie, it's happened to me. I went to Cuba, and it was very stupid on my part. I went to Cuba, and I smuggled some edibles. I figured, it can't be that serious. Whatever, I don't know what the fuck I was. Honestly, it was the dumbest thing I ever did. I didn't get caught for it, but now that I think about it, that was some stupid shit on my part, because Cuba don't play that shit. Damn, I might not be able to host the Oscars because of because of that incident. Oh, my point is, I may have tried smuggling a joint. I remember coming back from Jamaica I had bought so much weed because, you know, motherfuckers just came back, came to you. And on the last day, I had the good sense. It broke my heart, but I had the good sense. On the last day to Jamaica and when I'm heading home, I had the good sense of flushing that weed down the toilet. Trust me, it broke my motherfucking heart. I didn't have any friends. I wish I had someone I could have said, some tourist I could have said, hey, y'all want some weed? You can have it. But I ended up flushing. My point is, I didn't want to be done like Britney Grant. One of my biggest fears in life, if we feel like confessing, is going to prison. I'm like, not just prison, but going to prison. Like, probably that fear is why I never joined a gang, never hung out with the bad kids. Because I knew a kid like me would not make it in jail, man. I saw the movies, man. I could see myself snitching, breaking all the rules, crying, be a little bitch, you know what I mean? And I'm not made for jail, so that's why I keep me out of it. But what's even scarier than going to jail in a foreign country where motherfuckers don't speak any of your language. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, woo. Anyways, I felt bad for her being in a foreign jail. So with that said, so automatically that put me on the, yo, bring the poor woman home, man. Bring the poor person home. Bring her home, man. What the fuck? Do what you need to do. Anyway, so finally at first it was kind of looking hopeless, like she was never going to come home. And then finally it got down to, okay, look, we'll trade you. Russia was like, we'll trade you. We want Victor Bout, who's currently in your prison, and in exchange for Brittany Griner. You know what? Okay. And this is the second reason why. Hold on a second. This is the second reason why Brittany Griner was on my radar, is because I remember reading this headline and I meant to talk about it, and it says, oh, wait a minute. It goes, the title goes, Brittany Griner likely faced difficult conditions at Russian penal colony. Former prisoners and advocates say, like the Soviet gulag system they replaced, the prisons were often harsh and life-threatening. A 2021 State Department report on Russia's human rights abuse. Okay, so there's an article about that. But I remember reading that headline and then it just added to the, yo, fuck, man, I feel for her, and, you know, and bring her home. I mean, that's all I know. Look, I'm sure someone's yelling at me, oh, there's other people in prison. The fuck that she's a celebrity managed to get her in the front of the line. I'm not thinking about that. I'm just thinking about this particular soul that I've been made aware of is in a jail, in a Russian jail, and she may have been, fraud. They probably like, what's that word? Jesus Christ, my brain's not cooperating with me. Like they play, like it might have been like false charges or whatever. But she's, holy fuck, why am I complicating this thing? She was in a prison in fucking Russia. Wouldn't want that. I was gonna say wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. That's a lie. I wouldn't wish that on. I mean, yeah, no, I just felt bad for the poor woman. Anyway, so I remember reading the it just bothered me how everyone. So like I said, there was a mixed reaction, and one of the reactions that bothered me is everyone was, oh, that was a shitty deal. We traded fucking, it was a card game. Like, everyone's like, oh, that was a, like, oh, fucking. Okay, I guess, based on what I know about Victor Boot, I don't know. I got a sense that once he's out of jail, he may not be, like, the Victor Boot who went into jail may be completely different from the one who came out of jail. People are acting like, yo, fuck. He's like, is it Shaq? He's like Danny Ocean. Danny Ocean 11, released from prison. He's like, oh, shit. I'm going to be worse than when I came in, right? But, nah, he might be a pimp named Fly Guy. Was that his name? Fly Guy. Yeah, from... shame on you if you've never seen the movie I'm Gonna Get You Sucker. Yes, it is. I'm Gonna Get You Sucker. Now, I don't know if you've seen that scene in I'm Gonna Get You Sucker. Hold on a second. Yeah, okay. I'm playing it in the background. Yeah. You know what? Maybe I should stop because I don't know if I could legally do that. Anyways, yeah, I'm playing that scene. I was playing that scene in the background, and when Fly Guy gets released from prison, and that poor bastard hasn't figured out that times have changed, and the shit that looked cool when he went in jail don't look cool now. Yeah, man. So he comes out looking all like tacky, and he thinks he's cool, and everyone's laughing their ass off at him. My point is, Victor Bout might not be the badass merchant of death that everyone thinks he's going to be. Oh, no, I don't know. I'll tell you what. Okay. If by the end of Christmas, I end up, not that I'm looking for it, right? I want to be clear. Not that I'm looking for one. But if by the end of Christmas, if by the end of 2023, I manage to own a gun, not that I'll be buying one, right? But I'm just saying, if Victor Bout is the bad motherfucker I think he is, then weapons will be falling out the skies for all of us to have it. If that happens, then I'll be like, ooh, well, you know what? Yeah, y'all should have kept Brittany Griner in jail. Yeah, yeah. Whew! I didn't realize it was going to be that dangerous. And I'm just saying, look, I guess what bothers me with the people who are on like, oh, this was a shitty deal. Actually, it's not just that. What bothers me is the people acting like the government agency, the Biden administration. People do that with our own prime ministers, right? Like when they make a decision, they don't put any thoughts into it. Even the dumb decisions, a lot of thoughts went to, like, shit that looks stupid to us. We don't see what's going on. We don't get the briefings. We don't know what information they're working on. Granted, okay. No, actually, that was a lie. I was going to bring up the war in Iraq. How that was bullshit. But I think they knew it was bullshit. But that's not the point. I'm saying, I'm not on the side of people who, when the government makes a decision that I think is stupid, that I disagree with, my first thought isn't, oh, man, there's a bunch of idiots working there. Oh, my God. Like, oh, these guys just flipped the coin on this decision that said heads are, you know, and, nah, man, I think there was, like, some chess move. There's some chess game being played by both Russia and the United States when they made this trade. Like, look, man, these motherfuckers think these things through. Anyway, so there's this, the tweets about her and her release. Yeah, that's, everyone knows. One thought I had is, what did Russia have to gain? And like I said, some people think that Victor Bout, once he gets back to Russia, he'll be back in business. And Putin will be able to use him in his administration because he is currently in the middle of a war. He says, hey, word is you can get me cheaper guns because this war is costing me a lot of money. C'est du bon café. That's what I'm drinking, a little some coffee right now. It's feeling good. Hold on, I'm going to gulp this thing. Next time I'm drinking, I'm trying alcohol. All right. Where was I? Yeah, I'm talking a lot, Bear, but I'm saying, here's the thing. Here's the picture I'm thinking what's going on. Okay, I asked the question, what does Russia have to gain with this trade? And I'm considering, this is the assumptions I'm making. I could be wrong, but it's like I'm justifying my reason to being on the Welcome Home Brittany Griner side. So aside for the fact that, you know, being in a foreign jail sucks, in addition to that, considering the possibility that Bout ain't as badass as he used to be, because he's been in jail, his networks are gone. The reason he was successful before is because he was flying under the radar. Motherfuckers, the only people who knew him were his customers. But yeah, it took a while for Americans to finally arrest him. You know, I should read the rest of that book. I don't know why it's not an audiobook. Anyway, yeah. It took a while to arrest him. But one thing I'm saying, okay, let's pretend that my assumption is correct. Victor Bout ain't shit at this point. The only thing good about him is he's got a shitload of money. He still has a lot of Russian connection. And maybe this trade cost him more than it cost. Like, maybe this, maybe he's the one who's offended. Maybe the one, holy shit, you exchanged me for a black chick? Oh my God, holy fuck. All the work that I've done for you people, that's what my value is? Maybe he's the one who's home being feeling insulted, wishing he could have done, whatever. Okay, I'm saying, let's pretend this motherfucker's not effective. One thing I can see Russia gaining from this trade is fueling the fire on the angry white people who feel like, yo, fucking Biden, woke president, and he's got a black vice president, and these black people are getting all these special privileges. Me as a white person, I'm fucking dying in my own country, the country that's supposed to be kissing my ass. I'm not, you know, these black folks are getting away with all this shit. Like, I think Russia is like, people talk about Russian assets. I think Russia's real assets are the angry, the racist white, the people who stormed the Capitol, those white people, the fuck the vaccine folks, the like those. Basically, I'm saying Russia knows how to. Russia has a better understanding of white supremacy than white people have. Than white Americans, even white Canadians, but let's just stick to America, right? Than white America have of white supremacy. Now, Russia has a good enough understanding of white supremacy that not that they want to help the situation, but they know how to use that shit to their advantage. You know that Harry Truman quote? It goes, Is it Truman? Truman, the white man, here we go, it goes, Truman quote, it says, where'd it go? The one about stealing a dollar from a white man. Truman steal dollar white man quote. Oh, wrong white guy. Sorry, Lyndon B. Johnson. No wonder. How embarrassing. Yeah, Lyndon B. Johnson says, if you can't convince the lowest white man he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice. You're picking his pocket. He'll give him somebody to look down on, and he'll empty his pockets for you. So yeah, Russia doesn't need any assets. All they need to do is create situations like these. Yeah, okay, yeah. We'll take Viktor Bout, like from a propaganda campaign, from a media, from shit that's gonna, from a perspective of the shit that's going to end up on social media, this this works to their advantage. Like, look, if there's one thing January 6th, the storming of the Capitol has taught me, has taught everyone who has taught every terrorist group in across the world is that, oh, if we want to storm the Capitol, if we want to take over the United States, we got to use white people to do it. We can't do it. Them motherfuckers are too protected. They're protected against us. They're protected against the brown people, black people, and all these. What we need to do is manipulate these white people. Just convince them that shit is unfair. You're being oppressed. Of course, you don't tell them you're using your privilege. No, you're losing. You're dying as a race. The white man is the real victim. Keep sending that message. Keep fueling that fire. Because the people who get these messages are too fucking stupid to realize that they're getting played. I think where I'm going with all this is, one, welcome home, Brittany Griner, and how your situation has allowed me to understand how how the likeliness, the possibility of how, it's a thought that I've always had, that the same racism that built the United States might be the same racism that takes them down. I am not wishing for that to happen. I'm just saying, on this quest to fight racism, I don't know. It's like racism is the cancer that you're trying to take out. I don't know if United States can handle that shit. it's so embedded inside the country that it might. It's like, man, it's hard to be positive. It's hard to like look. I'm just saying. I think the greatest gain Russia got out of exchanging Victor Boot for Brittany Griner is that perception that they made crazy white people angrier. They gave them another reason to be pissed right around Christmas. I'm not laughing. I'm just saying, I think it's it's complicated, man. I bring this up, but the reason why I've been considering both sides, not agreeing with it. Like, I've always been like on the welcome home Brittany side. It's just that it's the way I wasn't sure, like, is the media on the side of white supremacy? Of course they are. But like the way they were, like, why weren't they saying the same shit I was saying? The media, like, would clearly present, basically made it look like, yo, fuck. It's as if they were presenting the story like, yeah, and today, Biden fuck-upness, they just traded this black bitch for the Merchant of Death. What the fuck's wrong with our world? White people, we need to come together. Anyway, yeah, I'm just saying, yeah, it's interesting, man. It was fascinating. Anyway, I'm just going to conclude this with welcome home, Brittany Griner. And if you're upset at her being home, fuck you. I'm just, yeah, you know what I mean? I mean, I think the other thing that fascinates me is how it really makes you think about how people value people's lives. Actually, you know, that's not fair. Because I'm going to pretend that maybe on the side of people who are mad at this trade, they're probably thinking about how, I think what they're worried about is that Victor Boot is going to get back into business. He's going to be even more ruthless than he was before. And I don't know, man. I think homie's going to be on house arrest. But I'm just saying, time will tell. I guess that's what it is. It comes down. I think the Biden administration did their research and they told themselves that he's a kitty cat. Yeah, we can let him out. We can give him back to Russia. I think that's the research they did. And the best we can hope for is that they're right. They're right. With that said, I'm still celebrating. I'm happy that Brittany Griner is back home. Stay the fuck out of Russia. I'm never going to Russia. I kind of would like to visit Moscow, but I don't trust those. Well, okay. They're in the middle of a war, so yeah, I'm not. I'm better off going to Dominican Republic. But that's another situation. All right, okay. Let's jump to next item on my run sheet. Okay, this is where I'm going to go into history section before I get into thoughts. This week in therapy and random thoughts. Okay, so quickly in history, I forgot to look up the date for this one. They said 33 years ago, a gunman walked into École Polytechnique Engineering School in Montreal and enter a mechanical engineering classroom armed with a semi-automatic. After separating women from the men, he opened fire. He opened fire on the women before turning the gun on himself. Okay, you know what? I'm gonna get the actual date, Montreal, because did we call it? Yeah, there was a death anniversary of. Okay, the École Polytechnique massacre. And that was on December 6th. Okay, so I should have presented this last week, but on the last episode, but, you know, better late than never. So I'm acknowledging that December 6th, 1989, 33 years ago, was the École Polytechnique massacre. And, I remember being a kid. You know what? For the sake of conversation, I remember being a kid and hearing that story and how there was so much focus on the person who did the killing. But, you know, I feel like saying That was the first seed planted. I don't know if that's accurate. No, that was one of the many seeds planted. Like that incident, the way they talked about it, the way people reacted to the story, was one of the seeds planted that sent me on a journey into, understanding feminism. And yeah, man, I guess, yeah, some shameful shit, man. I remember how they kept talking, violence against women. No, I feel like it was my intro to the concept of misogyny. At the time, I'm like, hating women? Why would you hate women? And like, it never made sense it's weird. It's like, why would you hate women? Bitches are cool. You know what I mean? It's like, I didn't understand misogyny while being a misogynist. That's well. Anyway, yeah. So, that was that. Forgot to mention that on the last episode. Okay. December 7, 1993, Ice Cube released his fourth album, Lethal Injection. And I don't really have any thoughts about the Lethal Injection album. Lethal Injection. I'm trying to remember what track was on there. Oh, man, fucking Google. Okay. Not Google, sorry. There we go. Lethal Injection. Okay, what track was there? Oh, hey, Mr. White. Yes, The Shot. I remember that track. Really Dope, Ghetto Bird. You know how we do it. Cave, bitch. Bob Gunn. Okay. What can I do? Little SG. Make it rough. Make it smooth. Okay, that was a dope one. Down for whatever. Enemy. When I get to heaven. Bet they won't call me a nigga by the time I get to heaven. And yeah. And what can I do? Yeah, I think that's probably the... Oh, Little SG. All right. Okay. Yeah, no, it was a dope ass album. It was... It's because it's the previous album, The Predator. That was a... it was nothing like the Predator. Predator was like a lot of my anger as a teenager, as a young black youth, was all like Predator was the soundtrack. Well, was one of the soundtrack for that anger. And then when Lethal Injection came out, I'm like, are you softening up on me, Ice Cube? Yeah. Anyway, yeah. All right. What else is there? December 7th, Lethal Injection. December 8th. The release of the album Doc's the Name. Okay, that was a dope ass album. You know, I should put a link to Doc's the Name, to the actual album. All right, there we go. Doc's the Name. Welcome to the Bricks. Yeah, that was a dope ass album. Yeah, I remember. It was winter. Let the Monkey Out. I'll Be That. Get It Live. Yo, back in that day when this album came out. Back in those days, I used to buy album, run to the HMV or whatever. Oh, that's all we had. We had HMV and bought either the CD or the tape. Like, I had a huge collection of that shit. Actually, yeah, I a lot of money went into that shit, man. But yeah, dope album. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah, dope album. What else happened this week? December 10th, release of Muddy Waters. Yeah, that was another dope. What's funny about Muddy Waters, I'm not sure why I wasn't into it. It's not that I had a problem with Redman, but I didn't buy that album. Like, I only checked out that album later in life. Oh, you know what it was? Okay, I get it. Because when it came out, I was trying to graduate, and all my social life was like, fuck that. You know, I wasn't trying to hear anything about, I was focused on my studies. You know what I mean? I gave away the hose. I turned my life to Jesus. No, that's not true. But I'm just saying, Yeah, it came out in 96. Anything in 96 is a big blur. My social life was dead. I didn't do any of that fun stuff. December 10th, 2002, Common's Electric Circus came out. I'll be honest with you, man. I don't remember buying that or paying attention to that album. Okay, yeah, I do remember looking at the cover and going, "What?" I think I bought the album, but wasn't really impressed by it. And looking at the cover and going, what the fuck's going on with Common? But whatever, man. He was like in, I guess, some experimental phase going on to, I don't know. I'm just, there's nothing I can say about the album. Last item I got is happy birthday to Easy Mo B, December 8, 1965. Oh, man is 67 years old. And only reason I remember Easy Mo B is because, Rock the Bell has something to say. They say, happy birthday, Easy Mo B. The BK Bread hitmaker has worked with Tupac, the Notorious B.I.G., Big Daddy Kane. Okay, I knew about Tupac. I didn't know he did work with Notorious B.I.G. Did not know he worked with Big Daddy Kane. And was one of the last producers to work with the legendary Miles Davis. Oh, wow. Show him some Born Day Love. Yeah. Yeah, man. I just know Easy Mo B made the beat for Temptation by Tupac. Yo, Mo B, man, drop that shit. Is that what it says? Yeah. Yeah, that was probably my favorite beat done by him. But yeah, happy birthday, Easy Mo B. And that's it. That's it. All right. All right, let's get into thoughts. Okay, first one is, this week in therapy, someone on Twitter, an account I follow on Twitter, asked a question, and what's an adult problem nobody prepared you for? I'll let you reflect on that one. What's an adult problem nobody prepared you for? Yeah, I appreciate this Twitter account. It's called Moral Philosophy. ML Philosophy, because it just asks questions that has me thinking, that sends me on these thought processes. And I replied with the accumulation of disappointments, dealing with disappointment. I'm talking about to the point where you're convinced that all you can expect from life, like where you equate life with just being disappointed. And I think that's one of the reasons that sent me into therapy. It was just the accumulation of, like, life was just one big ass, just felt like bullshit. And I realized at the core of my mécontentement, my negative feelings, my positive, was just feeling like all I had to show for were disappointments. And what's funny is how, because I think about the earlier me who was all into this philosophy, all into these self-help, all into these quotes about don't give up, keep your head up, joy comes in the morning, like all that shit. I was the one telling people, hey man, don't get discouraged, singing all these praise songs. And then when fucking, I guess it just, there was just so much of it that it just like hit me like a ton of bricks. And it just, I don't know, life just felt depressed. Life still feels depressing. Like if I'm still not that person who can, I keep saying, I'm not the guy you want to talk to if you find yourself feeling down about life. Because I'll just be a greeter. Yeah, you're right. Life sucks. It's a bitch. Life is a motherfucking bitch. I understand the people who prefer not to live life more than I do those who do love to live life. And hey, I don't want to hear from you fucking joie de vivre folks. You know what I mean? I know like what I just said is like, sacrilegious. It's a sin. It's what I'm saying is wrong, and I know that that probably triggered you. But I'm just saying, don't preach to me about that shit, because I'll just pretend to listen to you and be like, while still feeling what I feel, and I'm just saying, if you're down on life, it's okay to take the moment to acknowledge those feelings and deal with it. Like, look at that feeling like you're looking in the mirror and say, okay, that's who I'm fighting with right now. That's the current state I'm in my mind. Because trust me, man, you don't want to do something stupid like turn to religion, drugs, or like, you don't want to do something stupid like pretend like it doesn't get to you. And then allow these people with joie de vivre to like, tell you, you know, it's like that James Baldwin quote, if you don't face the problem, it won't get fixed. So if you are the accumulation of disappointments, that's my journey right now, dealing with that right now, and trying to tell myself that, I think it might have been, I can't remember who said, it might have been, what's that tall guy's name? Motivational speaker. But I remember this one tape. I used to buy a lot of motivational tapes, not CDs, tapes. And I'm blanking on his name. You all know who he is, he's a tall dude and whatever. But I remember he had this one where he talked about how your past, your future does not have to be equal to your past. Sometimes some people just have to go through a lot of like disappointments before they get to the actual till they get that one win. Some people, that's what their life is. L's after L's after L's until, and then a win. And some people are just wins and then followed up by L's. I don't know. Life is different for all of us, man. And it's up to you to face whatever the challenge you got in front of you, man. It's, yeah. I'm realizing how comparing my life to other people is not the key. Yeah, anyways, this concludes this week's in therapy. All right, random thoughts. And I just realized as I'm doing this podcast because I haven't really focused on growing my audience. And I'm realizing, I've been telling myself, what's the point of doing this podcast if you don't have an audience? Why are you doing this? And I'm realizing the reason I'm doing this is, well, at some point I'm going to focus on the audience. But the part that I enjoy is the same thing I used to enjoy about Toastmasters. I used to be a member of Toastmasters. And if you used to be a member, shout out to you too. And every week we would meet at the club and you'd have speeches to do. And we used to have this thing called Table Topics. And Table Topic is, the way it works is you're given a subject and you gotta make a 2-minute speech on that subject. And I still remember what was important is how I would feel before preparation, because you had little time to prepare for the speech. How I'd feel preparing for it and how I'd feel when it was done. And first, of course, I'm nervous. So I still feel the same nervous. But basically, doing this podcast is like doing Table Topics. It forces me to try to think on my feet. I need to remind myself of that, because I found myself, one of the reasons why I was annoyed before while I was recording, like at the beginning I was telling you how I was angry at myself, and I remember is that voice in my head that wants things to be perfect was fucking with me. And I remember that the more I did Table Topic, the more I accepted that I am never going to give the perfect speech. The best I could do, the best I could hope for is the best within myself. And that's what's going on here. It's it reminds me of the internal conflicts I go through when presenting a speech. And yeah, man, it's before I can face the audience, I gotta fight this demon inside me, this monster that's inside me that makes speech giving, speaking in front of a public, difficult. And that's what I'm doing, man. Just building that muscle. So yeah, no, this is just a reminder. This just reminded me of why I do this podcast, knowing fully well, there's not an audience. Now, don't get me wrong. This is not me saying, oh, poor me, no one wants to listen to me. No, it's not that. Is I know that I didn't put any effort in creating an audience. If there's an audience, it's like sheer fucking luck. It's like sheer, I'm going to call you. If there's someone listening to this enjoying this, I'm going to call you part of Providence. Even though I'm not trying to bring in God into this, but I'm just saying it's like the universe conspired for this to happen. Actually, it makes me think of someone on Twitter reached out to me, and his name is basically some hip hop head. And he's got a YouTube channel. I think he used to be CEO of whatever, right? Anyway, he reached out to me. He followed me, and I followed back. And then I checked this person's website. And I'm like, what the fuck? Holy shit. We should have been friends. Oh my, I should have been following you. And it just amazed me that they're the ones who followed me. So I sent them a message saying, hey, what made you, I know you're promoting a product, but how did you know? What about me? What about my profile made you realize? What about my profile made you realize, hey, you're going to like my content? And is it because I'm black? No. And then it hit me. Maybe I must have liked, because I tend to hit like a lot on Twitter. And I must have liked one of his posts and they just responded. And but I think what's amazing is how this content creator, YouTube channel, whatever, clicked on my profile. I checked out their content. I'm like, what the oh my God. And I was like grateful that they found me. and surprised that I'm not the one who found them. It's, you know, I'm comparing it to, it's the closest thing to finding love. It's like, you know, you're on POF or Tinder. Okay, I don't know if people look for love on Tinder, but I'm just saying, you know, for those of you looking for your one and only, and when you find them, it's like, oh, it's like, they're like a piece of the puzzle. They complete you. They two strangers getting together only to realize that, holy shit, we are like kindred spirits. So I'm hoping one day that's going to be me. I'm going to be just adding people and someone checks out my content and be like, what the fuck? I didn't realize someone thought like me or shared my interests or was into the same nerdy shit, corny shit that I'm into. But here we are. Here we are, man. So, yeah. Anyways, yeah. Oh, right. So the title I put in is Pop Champagne for the Hospital Parking Space. From Pop Champagne from the Hospital Parking Space. Okay, this doesn't make sense at all, but it makes sense in my own mind. Okay, this is what I'm trying to... I was just had a moment where I was reflecting on... I'm taking a long journey to explain one point. Right, okay. And it goes... Yeah, I'm going to take my time with this one. It goes... Okay. I was in a club a few years ago. I was in a club with my cousin. I was in a club with my cousin. He's a photographer. Oh, at the time, he was a photographer. He was that guy who takes pictures and then to the which the club uses to promote their clubs. And I was just following along. And I established the fact that it was because of him I'm in this club. But it was a lot of young people. People younger than me. Not my age group. Like, I guess... I must have been in my 40s, and most of the people in the club were like 20s, probably, you know, this was in Ontario, so 19, 30s. All I know is I was likely the oldest person in the club, me and probably the owner, whatever. And, you know, so I was in the background. I want to establish, I was in the background just looking around, you know, I'm just like, okay, well, I was in the club enjoying the music, but that's not the point. The thing is, because it was in Toronto was big on this culture of showing off. So I was amazed that all the time the bottle service staff would walk around with their I was going to say chandelier, the candles or whatever, the sparklers. You know, I don't know if you've ever been in a club, but when the thing is people show off by paying for bottle service, and the way it works is you go to the club and you buy some liquor, instead of getting drinks, you ask for the actual whole bottle, and they mark up the price like a motherfucker. But the thing is, you're letting everyone in the club know that I have money. You probably don't have money, because like I said, it was a lot of young people, and I'm like, yeah, what's the percentage of these people with ordering bottles are using their parents' credit cards to buy this shit. But then it's a lot of black people that were in that club. But anyway, my point is, it was a lot of people were showing off the fact that they have money. And at first I was envious. Then I remember being all mean. I was like, I bet they're using their parents' credit card for that shit. And one person who did bottle server, my cousin was like, oh, that dude, he's a pimp. I'm like, fuck. I mean, not that it makes it better, but my point is, I remember allowing myself to feel less than because I wasn't one of those people being able to say, hey, bitches, bottle service is on me. Like, I could have done it, but it would be like a very stupid decision on my part, because I'd be using my credit line to pay for this shit. It's a stupid thing to do, but I'm saying this because I know there's a lot of people who listen to the bottle service. Bottle service is stupid. But anyways, in the mindset that I was in, I was one of those people at that time, in my undergrad, I was at those people who allowed themselves to feel lesser than because they didn't have as much money as the next person. You know, I allowed myself to feel like, oh, because you're broke, I wasn't broke, but you know, because you're not spending cheese like these people, you know, it's big in hip hop culture. It's like your value as a human being is determined by your financial statement, by how much money you got. I was caught up into that mindset of what's in your pocket is how we measure your growth as a, you know, what's your net worth? And if your answer ain't in the six digit, you ain't shit. You know what I mean? If you ain't those people, I was, remember buying into that, all that shit. And so it took me a while to actually believe in notions like, I spoke about this in a previous podcast. Talaam A.C. has a line, Talaam A.C., poet, one of in a poem called Brotherly Love. And he talks about a man is judged by, is not judged by what's in his pocket. Okay, I'm fucking up the quote, but I'm paraphrasing. It goes, a man is judged by what's in his soul and what's in his heart and not what's in his pocket. And I remember hearing that and I'm going, yeah, whatever, man. I'm like, you know, I can't use my soul to put a down payment on a house. You know what I mean? I can't use my soul to, like, you know, get bottle service. You know, I can't, you know, make it rain with, I can't go to the bank and say, here, I'm a very nice person. Give me money, you know? Like, it, that quote bothered me. But something happened to me this week that finally got me to slightly snap off that mindset of allowing money to judge a person's character. I had to go to the hospital, nothing serious. I had to go for an appointment and for an allergy test. And to go to this allergy test is these motherfuckers, to get to the allergy test, there was a big sign that said, hey, you got to pay for parking. We don't validate parking. And it had me thinking, who are these motherfuckers who are like making money from parking space at the hospital? All I know, it's not the fact that I had to pay for it. It was more the idea of people profiting. There's a person profiting from parking space at the hospital. Now, in a capitalistic world, it's like, yo, man, that's just the way shit works. It's like, if I don't do it, someone else will do it. But look, fuck you. This is my moment where I'm like, oh, you're a piece of shit. You ain't shit. You're a terrible person, man. I'm like, yeah, man. Look, if one of those people, it just had me thinking, if one of those people with the bottle service that I was like worshiping because, oh, they got bottle service. If I find out they were, the reason they have that money is because they make money from, you know, the parking space at hospital. I'd be like, oh, fuck you. Fuck, yo, I hope you choke on that drink, man. You ain't, fuck you and your, it was the first time that I'm real, that it hit me that, okay, financial status is just that, a financial status. But it doesn't define whether you're a great or a bad human, a great human being. It doesn't define that shit. Like, in my eyes, I'm not saying people who profit from sex trafficking are at the same level of people who profit from hospital parking space. I'm not saying it's the same, you know, it's the same crime, but the lack of respect I have for these individuals, like if you're one of those people popping champagne, if you're the one of those people showing off their money, okay, if you're one of those people, A, showing off their your money, it's tacky. But what's even worse, if I find out that, oh wait, you make money from what? From child labor, from sex trafficking, from the parking space at the hospital. Oh, from loans, predatory loan and shit like it's like I'm saying I finally understand what Talaam was saying about or people like Talaam or people like him who say shit. Yo, money isn't everything. I mean, not having it is. It is. Yes, I'm quoting Kanye, the anti-Semitic. Anyway, the sellout. Okay, you know what? No Kanye speak. But yeah, no. It's just... I think it's not just me. I think us as a society, we've learned to treat rich people as people who are better than us. And then some of them just have like empty snow. That's all they are, just rich. They're not better than you. They just have more money. They sure they have influence. Probably got more. Shout out to Cannabis. I'm going to quote Cannabis. He goes, he's feeling himself because he's got more cheddar than me. but I bet he doesn't have the skills to eat an ass like to eat a nigga's ass like me. Okay, the point is. Cannabis is saying, he was talking about LL Cool J. He goes, yeah, he's feeling himself because he's got more money than me, but he ain't got the heart like I fucking do. Like, I rip MCs. I'm gonna quote Kanye again. He goes, yeah, sure, I need my loot by loot day, but that's not what gives me the heart of Kunta Kinte. I just, look, paying for that parking space, it's not a problem for me, but I'm thinking of the people who have to go to the hospital, people who are obligated to go to the hospital, and here you are and taking money from them, profiting off their misery. I think, yeah, man, I think any human being who profits off other people's miseries, oh, fuck. I don't like being the judgmental type, but it's just, you know what? It's just reminding me that having money doesn't mean you have character. Having money doesn't mean you are a great person. It just means that you can afford to do shit like lie about the kind of person you are. That's real. And you know, I gotta be careful. I'm not trying to say, hey, people who have money are bad. That's not, rich people are bad. That's not what I'm trying to get at. It's more me trying to snap out of this ugly, wrong, defective mind state that I used to do. I think, yeah, I used to worship folks who just had money. I used to buy into that notion, prosperity gospel about, yeah, man, the more money you have, the more you're blessed by God. It's like, nah, probably like Biggie says, more money, more problem. Maybe, no, your money is the challenges that you have to face. Anyway, all this to say, if you are someone who profits off sick people, you ain't shit, fuck you. You know, what if you listen to my podcast? Whatever. You ain't shit. You know, feel free to explain yourself in an email, but, you know, but don't bullshit me. Damn, I'm thirsty. All right, next item. On the, my reaction to this content creator's content. I'm not going to play this whole thing, but something came on my timeline. A Christian influencer, and she says,
masturbation is a form of witchcraft. Not anyone is realizing that this is a demonic attack and it's a form of witchcraft. Masturbation is a form of control. You understand that you are literally controlling an orgasm. You're controlling your own pleasure. That is witchcraft. That is a curse that you begin to place over your own life that will then literally bleed into your future children's life. This means that this will become a generational curse that you started or that your parents started.
Yeah, I'm not going to put the whole thing. You can, the link will be in the show notes. but it's a Christian influencer saying shit like, you know, masturbation is witchcraft. Oh, it's bullshit. Don't get me wrong. It's bullshit. Now, I thought I had a policy of respecting all content creators. And I'm realizing that this person, no, not at all. Like, one, I can't tell if this person is for real. And if she is for real, I'm trying to pretend that this person is like me. Well, no, she's not like me in the sense that I don't think she feels insecure about what she's saying. She's not worried about... When she recorded that shit, she believed that shit. And she, I don't know what she thought, whether she expected to get praise for it or whether she knew she was going to get fucking how ridiculous what she's saying sounded. Or maybe she didn't care. Maybe she didn't care. Like, I forget that people don't see the world, don't process the world the same way I do. I'm thinking about my reaction to her content and thinking about the possibility that as I publish what I publish, someone out there is going to have the same disgusted reaction or, oh man, that's some ridiculous shit you just said to what I'm saying. And it just hit me. It's like, if that's the case, ain't shit I could do about that. I have to look at this extreme situation to be like, to accept the fact that, yeah, that's the thing. Someone out there might be reacting to your shit the same way I'm reacting to her. Like how stupid it is, how ridiculous she sounds. But it just means like, look, that's how the universe made us, to be on the opposite side of the spectrum of viewpoint and whatnot. Usually when I reference content, yeah, because I'm not gonna diss this person. Well, too late. It kind of sounds like I did, but it's like I made myself a promise that the only content that I reference on my podcast, it's not to diss that person. It's because I appreciate the content. I like it, so I'm adding to it. I don't want to be those people like Stitch incoming. But I'm realized maybe I'm lying to myself. Like if you say some horrible shit, like if you're like Kyle Rittenhouse talking about tweeting about how everybody should be held accountable. Yeah, I'm going to talk about that shit. I guess I'm realizing this comes back to the saying of a friend to all is a friend to none. It's accepting the fact that, yeah, there's some people out there, you know, as much as I love the human race, some of y'all, it's accepting the fact that some of y'all are outside my capacity to love. I think, you know, you live on this earth, like do your thing. As long as we don't cross paths, then we'll be okay. I'm still sticking to my policy of not, I think I might be lied. I was going to say, I'm still sticking to my policy of not using content, not speaking about content that I don't like. But if you do say something that I consider, something offensive, then yeah, I will probably speak about your content. Like, there's this one, I'll probably put it in the show. There's this one person, actually, I'll put it in the show notes. There's this one content creator on TikTok. Let's see if I could bring it up while I'm speaking. Because I'm a man, I don't, okay, hold on a second. Maybe see if I could do, okay, you might hear some noise. I really don't like this Elon Musk guy. Anyway, yeah, okay, so let's see if I can, I'll put it in the show notes. There's this dude who did a stitch comment on TikTok in relation to, okay, some girl was getting ready, said something stupid about Brittany Griner, about coming home and the usual right-wing Republican talking points. You know, oh, fuck, I hope you respect the national anthem. You better respect their country now that you've been traded. She was just saying some bullshit. And someone added his content and pretty much debunked, what's that word? Proof check? No, fact check. Basically acknowledged that, yeah, this bitch is about to say some racist shit. And just cleared out that, yeah. And what I'm saying is I'm grateful that content creator did that. Did a stitch to say, this is why this person is wrong. Because she added facts. You know, and, oh, there we go. Found it. Hey, I'll tell you what. I'll play it. I'm saying I'm grateful for this. No, it's too long. Hold on a second, because I don't want to take more time than I need to. Oh, God damn it.
This message is for Brittany Griner, so if you're not Brittany.
Okay, 4 minutes and 1 second. Okay, so the content creator's name is Austin Archer. No, it's not. The content creator is your pal, Austin. Yeah, Austin Archer. Anyway, yeah. And do I follow him? Yes, I am. Okay. Anyways, so I'm grateful for his content because it's not that he dissed the person. Well, they dissed themselves, but he just shows where they were wrong. Basically, he responded to ignorance with facts. I think that's why I can respect. I respect doing that. But I'm just not trying to be like everyone else who does shit. People love conflict. People love conflict, and conflict sells on the internet. And I don't want to do that. Anyways. All right. Okay. All right. Last item before we end with a little moment of positivity. There's an article I recently read on CNN. They have why most men don't have enough close friends. And the reason where I heard about it is from probably a podcast episode on The Black Guy Who Tips. They referenced it. And reading it had me thinking about, I helped me figuring out a direction for this, for my podcast. It just talks about how, well, okay, I'll just summarize with these quick thoughts. One is it had me thinking about myself. Two, it reminds me why I keep dissing the cult of masculinity, because the cult of masculinity is the reason why a lot of us men have difficulty being friends with each other. It's a lot of men, when you say about, you know, why most men don't have enough close friends, the first thing they're thinking about, oh, that's some gay shit. Anyways, it just had me thinking about, because it ended with something that I like. It just, quality counts, quality over quantity. Growing up, I remember believing that. I think I was trying to be like Jesus. I bought into this notion of Christians being more like Jesus, loving everyone on the planet, because that's what Jesus did. He loved everyone on the planet. The more I think about it, I think the biggest, I can believe the walking on water more than I can believe that this motherfucker, Jesus, loved everyone on planet Earth. Nah, man, fuck that. Have you met people on planet Earth? Some motherfuckers don't. If there's one thing the internet has showed me is that not everyone, in my case, is should be loved. But that's not, you know, that like. Anyway, it just had me thinking about how growing up, I was focused more on quantity more than quality. I reached a point in my life where I realized that, it was actually after the death of George Floyd. It had me reevaluate my understanding of friendship. And it hit me and made me realize that I don't have a lot of real friends. There's a lot of people I just dismissed because, yeah, we just associates. You're just like, yeah, there are people who I don't want to show up at my funeral saying how, oh, me and
Crocker,
me and B Black used to kick it. Hold on a second. 1 minute. I'm going to censor that shit out. Anyways, yeah. Me and B Black used to kick it and shit like that there. And, but yeah, one thing women do, quantity over quality. And I'm realizing that I'm focusing on quality. Fuck quantity. There's a lot of people who, look, I tell you what, I don't think I could say anything more to compliment this article, so it'll just be in the show notes. You can read it for yourself. I don't know. I might have to have a part two on this article, but it just had me thinking about, one, why I hate the church of masculinity. When I say church of masculinity, I'm talking about toxic masculinity, patriarchy, the stupid shit men do, our inability to connect as human beings and establish like win-win relationships. Yeah, it just reinforced. Basically, reading this piece confirmed a lot of my suspicions about my relationship with other men and why they suck. Anyways, okay, little moment of positivity. This one is something going around the internet, and I'll leave it in the show notes for you to see, but you've likely seen it if you've been around, assuming you're not listening to this in the future. But it's this little girl who's at a play. I guess it's a play, and I'll play it in the background. And yeah, it's the expression of it. She's at a play, and you can hear in the background someone yelling, you know, her name is probably Emily, and they're yelling, and you can see her turn around. It's as if she's hearing someone calling her name. She's on stage with all her classmates, and I guess her parents filming these kids are yelling, Emily, Emily, whatever. And you can see her turn around, and when she sees her parent, I'm assuming it's her parents or, you know, her relatives, her close look, the look on her face of sheer joy, the emotion, it's just on this little girl, it's just like heartwarming. It's as I was feeling grumpy today before recording, just watching this video was like, oh my God. Oops. Sorry, put the volume down. Yeah, just the look on her face when she sees the, oh my God, it's just sheer joy. And if you don't feel emotional about that thing, if that video doesn't make you feel emotional and lift you up, then you're a monster. You're a monster. Gingerbread man, you're a monster. Anyway, yeah. Holy shit, there's a lot of Kanye quotes that I've made today. All right, I'm going to conclude. This concludes today's episode. Holler at me at on Twitter at BBlizak. At BBlizak at Shut Up Podcast. And yeah, holler at me on Twitter until Elon Musk drives it to the ground. Website is shutuppodcast.com. Find the show notes there. And email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. To subscribe to our show, just use our RSS feed off the website or find us on Google and Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcasts. Yeah. All right, peace.